Welcome to the 11KBW podcast on Brexit and recent CJEU decisions by Timothy Pitt Payne, QC. This talk was given at the 11KBW Information Law Conference on 6th of March 2019 at the Kelvin Theatre in London. For more podcasts and information, please visit 11kbw.com.
Thank you, Patrick. So, you'll remember at the end of Robin's paper, there was a Brexit cartoon that was showing on the screen. And that, we'd been talking about Brexit on and off all through the day. And finally, I got, I don't know quite what, possibly the short straw, I got the task of actually trying to bring together at the, as the last of these presentations, how Brexit is going to affect UK data protection law. And I have to say, when I said a while back that I would do the Brexit slot in the conference, I was thinking, well, okay, the conference is happening on the 6th of March. So by then, for sure, we will know exactly what's happening with Brexit. It will just be dead easy. Not so. So I think really my presentation about Brexit really bifurcates around two possibilities. One is what happens in the no deal scenario, we leave without a deal, and then the second is what happens if we leave on Mrs. May's deal, in other words, on the basis of the withdrawal agreement broadly as it currently stands, coupled with the political declaration. Of course, the withdrawal agreement is talking about what happens at the point of withdrawal and during the transitional period, up to the end of 2020, possibility of extension beyond that. The political declaration is more aspirational and is talking about what the future relationship might look like. And then at the very end, I want to pick up one or two things from recent European court cases that haven't been picked up in the earlier presentations. So, just as a starting point, I make the point that there are effectively currently four different data protection regimes in UK law. And I make this point because I want to say something about what's going to happen to each of these four after Brexit. And thinking about this earlier today, I was reminded of, there was a French joke from the days before German unification, when French politicians used to say, "I love Germany. I love Germany so much, I'm really glad there are two of them." Well, I love data protection so much, I'm really glad that in terms of UK regimes, there are effectively four of them. So we've currently got what you might call the standard GDPR regime, for which you have to cross-refer between the GDPR itself and the 2018 Act. Then the applied GDPR regime, the idea of which was to extend the GDPR to some sorts of processing that fall outside the scope of EU law, so that UK controllers wouldn't be having to work out whether their processing was or wasn't within the boundaries of EU law. Then the law enforcement regime, by which we implement in this country the law enforcement directive, and the national security regime, which is effectively a homegrown data protection regime. So we have those four regimes altogether. And to state the obvious, those will remain unaltered until we leave the EU, or perhaps one should say, unless we leave the EU, because there's a certain amount of speculation still, even now, that there are possible scenarios where Brexit doesn't even happen. And that's the case whether we leave on the 29th of March or whether we leave on some later date. And of course, the first point that strikes anybody when they come to this regime for the first time is it's incredibly complex, both having these four different parallel regimes and so often having to read the GDPR and DPA 2018 side by side. And I've been struck a couple of times having conversations about this area of the law with lawyers, and with lawyers who are very strongly pro-Remain. And sometimes people will say to you, well, if there's any consolation in Brexit, it means that at least we have the chance to start again with data protection and come up with our own domestic data protection regime. And I think one of the striking things is that even under a no-deal Brexit scenario, there is absolutely no suggestion that we will want to rewrite data protection law from scratch. And I'm sure there are two reasons for that. One is that it is to rewrite the whole thing would be an astonishingly complex task. And who wants to take that on at a time when our whole political and legislative system is so gummed up with Brexit? But also, of course, there is such a strong interest in keeping the flow of personal data between the UK and the EU, more or less as it is at present. People in the media sometimes talk about managed no deal as an option, or politicians talk about managed no deal. And you think, well, what on earth do they mean by that? And I think actually some of the work that's been done to prepare for a no-deal Brexit in the data protection area is actually an illustration of what people mean when they talk about managed no-deal. So I've talked about those two possibilities. Either we leave without a deal or we leave on the basis of the current withdrawal agreement political declaration. There are, of course, in theory, other possibilities, but I think for the purposes of this paper, I'm disregarding those. And just to summarise the practicalities, if we get a no-deal Brexit, what will happen at that point is that the GDPR itself will be incorporated into UK law on exit. So at the point of exit, under the withdrawal legislation, the GDPR simply becomes part of UK law. Now, as a part of UK law, it doesn't quite work. There are too many cross-references to European institutions. So at that point of exit, what would happen is that the GDPR would then be modified by UK regulations to make sure that it's workable as a piece of UK law. What you would then have, and this is something that I'll be saying a bit more about later on, is enormous practical difficulties in relation to data flows between the UK and the EU. Because under this scenario, in this no-deal story, at the point of departure, the UK suddenly becomes a third country in EU terms, albeit one where the data protection legislation is very similar to the EU data protection legislation. One also has to think about what the impact would be on data flows between the UK and other third countries, notably the US. What if we get a Theresa May Brexit, let's call it that, a withdrawal agreement, political declaration Brexit? Well, then we know we're into a transition period when, broadly speaking, nothing is going to change very much. What happens at the end of the transition period? Well, that depends on the big question of whether by the end of that period there's been an EU finding of adequacy in relation to UK data protection law. Because if by that point you've got an adequacy finding, that's going to make life much easier in terms of UK-EU data flows. If you don't have an adequacy finding, then what you'd find is we're looking at another cliff edge. So some of the issues that would arise on a no-deal Brexit would potentially then arise at the end of a transition period if by that point we didn't have an EU adequacy finding. So, first of all, looking at the no-deal scenario. So in that scenario, we know that the GDPR would carry on applying as part of our domestic law, and that's under Section 3 of the 2018 Withdrawal Act. And the Data Protection Act itself will still apply, so That can sit alongside the GDPR, and the law enforcement regime and the national security regime can all carry on operating because they depend on the 2018 Act. But then there's the issue, well, how would the GDPR actually operate effectively? And for that purpose, we have some regulations that were published in draft before Christmas, laid before Parliament in mid-January. And these regulations, and if we get a deal and a transition period, they won't come into effect. But if we leave under no deal, these are the things that are intended to make the GDPR workable in the UK. And in terms of what they'll do, just a few points to pick up. One of the things that they will do is amalgamate the ordinary GDPR and the applied GDPR regime. So effectively, those will be melded together into a single regime. So we'll go from having four parallel regimes to having three parallel regimes. The new UK regime, as in the GDPR adopted as a part of UK law, will have an extraterritorial effect in this sense that if you have an establishment in the UK and process in the context of that establishment, or if you provide services to or monitor UK subjects and process their personal data in that context, then the UK GDPR will apply to all of that. So in other words, just as the GDPR as it stands has an extraterritorial effect outside the EU, so the UK GDPR will have an extraterritorial effect outside the UK. There are various functions that are conferred on the European Commission or the European Data Protection Board. Those will go to the UK government and the ICO to make the regime workable in this country. And there are various bits and pieces that will be removed from the GDPR simply because post-Brexit they won't be applicable, they won't be relevant. So far, if not so far so good, then at any rate, so far quite a lot of planning being done to ensure continuity in the UK after a no-deal Brexit. And I think the bottom line is that if you are a UK controller processing personal data of people who are in the UK, after a no-deal Brexit, you're not really going to notice much in the way of a difference. Where things get more complicated is in relation to what happens to international data transfers, after a no-deal Brexit. And there, one has to think separately about transfers from the UK to the EU, so we export personal data, and then the transfers where we import personal data from the EU. In terms of exporting personal data, well, that's very much in the UK's control. What are going to be the rules that are applied to a UK data controller who wants to send personal data outside the UK? And to make life easier, what we are proposing to do on New Deal is, for the time being, to recognise all the EEA states, the EU and EEA institutions, and Gibraltar as providing an adequate level of protection for personal data. So that will mean that a UK data controller following a no deal who wants to send personal data to EEA countries shouldn't have difficulties in doing so. What about transfers the other way? Well, of course, what would make our lives very easy would be if, at the point of a no-deal Brexit, the EU came along and said, well, despite the fact that it's no-deal, we are going to make a finding of adequacy in relation to the UK's data protection regime, and that means that data transfers from the EEA to the UK can carry on as before. There's no indication that that's going to happen, though. So that's the point of difficulty. Now, what about transfers from the UK to the US? at the moment, as I'm sure people will be aware, we have the privacy shield governing data transfers from the EU to the US. Will we still be able to rely on that after Brexit? Well, broadly speaking, the answer is yes. In December, the US Department of Commerce issued some updated standards of compliance for Privacy Shield participants. What it comes down to is that after Brexit, there are some additional measures that those participating organizations need to implement. In particular, they need to make a public commitment that their Privacy Shield participation extends to personal data received from the UK post-Brexit. If they do that, we will still be able to use the Privacy Shield to transfer personal data to the US following a no-deal Brexit. Otherwise, we won't be able to do that, and we'll need to look at other mechanisms for transfer to organizations in the US. In terms of the various bases on which we might be able to carry on receiving personal data from the EU following a no deal, there was an EDPB paper on this in mid-February running through the various options. And what they say is if we don't have an adequacy decision at the point of a no-deal Brexit, then these are the things that we can rely on. One is the model data protection clauses. Secondly, binding corporate rules. Thirdly, codes of conduct and certification mechanisms. Or fourthly, derogations. Now, none of those are at all straightforward to rely on. As far as the standard clauses are concerned, well, there are some gaps in the framework of standard clauses. Notably, we don't at the moment have standard clauses that would cover a transfer between an EU processor and a UK controller. We have controller-to-controller clauses. We have clauses that would cover a transfer from an EU controller to a UK processor, but not from an EU processor to a UK controller. So the standard clauses won't operate in every case. Binding corporate rules, well, they take an awful long time to put in place, and they will work within different companies in the same group, but not wider than that. The codes of conduct and certification mechanisms, those are new creatures brought into existence by the GDPR. It's not at all clear whether those will be able to operate in practice post-Brexit. And the various derogations in the GDPR for international transfers are intended to be a last resort and are narrowly drawn and are not intended to be a basis for routine data transfer. So what it comes down to, I think, is if we do have a no-deal Brexit, there are real practical difficulties in a number of situations in EU bodies transferring personal data to the UK. And those are difficulties that arise under the GDPR as it works in the EU. They're not difficulties that can be remedied by UK law. So those are difficulties where the extent to which the UK can, certainly the extent to which the UK government can make life easier for itself is very limited. Now, what happens if we get a Theresa May Brexit? Well, first of all, we have the transition period during which EU law would continue to operate. See Articles 126 and 127 of the withdrawal agreement. And that would include in relation to data protection. So for very many purposes, in effect, we would be treated as if we were still a member of the EU during the transition period, certainly in terms of the operation within the UK of EU data protection law. There's a very clear indication in the political declaration that there is a strong desire for continuing convergence between the EU and the UK in relation to data protection law. And I think it's really striking, actually, if you look at the political declaration dealing with the future relationship, if you look at Articles 8 to 10, those talk about, you know, what are the things, what's the glue that's going to bind together the EU and the UK in their future relationship? And Article 8, well, first of all, it talks about common adherence to things like human rights standards, and then it talks about common data protection standards. So, I mean, they are really given, there's a lot of emphasis there on data protection in the political declaration. And it certainly heralds a desire that there should be a finding of adequacy by the end of the transition period. But obviously there's no commitment, there's no promise that that will be in place. There's also some rather vague but warm language about what a good idea it would be for the regulators in the UK and the EU to continue cooperating after Brexit. But again, not much flesh on the bones in terms of what that would actually look like. And if we get to the end of the transition period and there isn't a finding of adequacy, then we will hit a lot of the same issues that I've been discussing already about, well, what's the basis on which EU bodies can carry on transferring personal data to the UK? That is something of a whistle-stop tour of some of the Brexit issues and some of the difficulties arising under that. I want to finish by talking about a couple of the recent or current CJEU cases in this area. One is, as far as I can think of, this is the first data protection case we've had in the CJEU from Latvia. It was decided under the old data protection law, but I think it has some potential application under the new law also. It involved an individual who took some video footage of his police questioning, and he uploaded it and put it online. I think he put it on YouTube. And he was told to take it down by the Latvian data protection regulator, and he refused to do so, and he ended up in the CJEU. And there were really two issues. I mean, once they got past the point of saying this is processing of personal data, which it very obviously was, there were two issues that the court had to consider. One was whether it came within the household or domestic exemption. And of course, under the new law, there's still a limitation that it doesn't apply in relation to household or domestic activities. Well, is it part of your household or domestic life that you put footage online of yourself being interrogated by the police? Perhaps not surprisingly, the court said, no, it's not. And the main reason it wasn't was that there was absolutely no limitation as to who was able to access it. But I think this does open up an issue which we've had in data protection law for absolutely ages, going back to the Lindqvist case, the early case about somebody with a blog where they were processing personal information. If you put information online as part of, say, social media activities, is that processing that is caught by the data protection regime, or is that part of your household or domestic life? And certainly, Recital 18 in the GDPR suggests that social media activity may be part of your domestic and household life and outside the scope of the GDPR. And I think in the light of the Latvian case, it may be highly relevant to say, were you making the information available to the world in general, or were you using your privacy controls to make it available to a more limited set of people? The other question in the Latvian case was this journalistic processing? Might be thought that it was a bit ambitious to be arguing on the one hand what I'm doing is part of my domestic life and on the other hand what I'm doing is journalism. But I suppose sometimes you just have to pick the best arguments you can and run with them. And on the journalistic exemption, the individual had rather more mileage there before the CJEU, and they ended up deciding that was for the National Court to determine. And then the final thing that I wanted to refer to was the Advocate General's opinion in the Google and Canil litigation, which which Rupert Payne's referred to earlier on today. And this was in relation to the scope of the right to be forgotten, and specifically, just how widely did Google have to delist where there was a successful right to be forgotten claim? Did they have to delist worldwide so that nobody in the world would be able to see the material or would be able to get it from a Google search? It would be delisted for everybody. And the Advocate General was very concerned about the implications of that. And he ended up saying that what they should do is they should confine the protection of the material to the EU. But what that should include was geo-blocking in relation to people who were within the EU. So not just delinking it from EU versions of the Google site, but delinking it in such a way that anybody searching any Google search engine from the EU wouldn't be able to follow up the links to this material. It would be effectively delinked. I think that raises an interesting question. Post-Brexit, what should the ICO be doing? What should be the geographical scope of any order that any enforcement action that the ICO might take in relation to delisting? Should the ICO be saying, well, you've got to restrict access to this material to anybody in the EU, so stop anybody in the EU from accessing it? Or should the ICO post-Brexit only be giving remedies in relation to people in the UK? Now, certainly once we're out of any transition period and once our data protection law is effectively domestic law for the UK, it seems to me at that point it would be very hard to justify the ICO making an enforcement determination against a search engine which applied beyond the scope of people who were present in the UK. So in other words, just as the Advocate General is suggesting that as of now, delisting should be confined so as to block access to material in relation to people in the EU, so post-Brexit, I'm suggesting the ICO should be saying, well, we should be looking at blocking access for people who are in the UK, but not any wider than that. So that is an attempt to pick up some bits and pieces from CJEU cases, and also to try and get out my crystal ball and to see where we might be with data protection post-Brexit. Thanks very much indeed.